Josh Wheeler is a Yale man from Manhattan's Upper West Side who's been a forest ranger, a carpenter, a raw food chef, and a teacher, among many other things. He was also born moderately deaf, a condition that quickly worsened, though through a mix of cleverness and the neglect and the clamor of growing up among four siblings, it was long overlooked. When he became a Peace Corps volunteer in a small town in Zambia, there was rarely any peace. The village of Manunga was poor and often violent. Yet Josh Wheeler found friendship and purpose there, even as it became a place of danger and despair for him. He's written a book that's both a coming-of-age memoir and even a comedy of manners between those who can hear and those who do without it. The book is called The Unheard, A Memoir of Deafness in Africa. Josh Wheeler joins us in our studio. So nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
Do you mind if I begin by asking, just so we'll understand during the interview, how deaf are you?
Well, I am profoundly deaf. And past that, I think the only distinction is just stone deaf, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And about 5 years ago, hearing aids stopped working for me. So then I went 2 years with no hearing whatsoever, and I just signed. And then in August of 2005, I had an operation for a cochlear implant. Mm-hmm. So I now wear a cochlear implant in my right ear, and it's been an amazing success. It cuts the nerve to the ear, and instead of hearing through an ear, you hear through a computer. And so with this computer, my hearing has improved from getting about 14% of the words that are said mm-hmm. on a standard random test to very close to 100%. Mm-hmm. So it's been amazing.
Mm. But it helps if I'm able to look at you.
Yes, I read lips too. Sometimes I guess mm-hmm. and hope I'm right.
And well, I find it amazing to understand the younger Josh Wheeler that you write about in this book. For you were so good at lip reading, a lot of people. Growing up, people in your own family didn't know you were deaf. This became a revelation.
No. I have a cousin who's also deaf, and he likes to say that he can understand just enough that people don't get how hard it is.
Your solace in your deafness as you were growing up was literature reading. Yeah. And beating on your brothers.
Yes. Yeah, that's an important one. You need the physical outlet. I mean, there were all these frustrations. And, you know, deafness, it's a very private disability in a way. People don't see it. And if you're raised mainstream like I was, that is, if you're not raised to sign, then you're pretty much always trying to be hearing, mm-hmm. to be something you're not. So you're always kind of fighting against your condition and trying not to let people know about it. But somewhere it's going to come out. And luckily I had a little brother. I have two. So it could come out on them.
Yeah. Well, the tension must be terrible. And I guess socking your brother, who, by the way, they both sound as if they liked it as much as you did.
Well, talk to the therapist.
I want to get you to read a section from your book, which is, I don't mind saying, funny and moving and just beautifully observed. When you first arrived in the village of Manunga,
okay.
We'll tell the people at home. There's a small word in here that your children have heard, but you might not want them to hear it this morning.
All right. A month after my arrival in Manunga, I moved from the small blue and yellow shack near the clinic to a large thatch roof hut a quarter mile farther into the village. I figured there I'd get some distance from the market's drunks, tout boys, and roving packs of staring children. My new landlord was jovial and prosperous, a tall man who wore a blue beret tilted low over one eye. He had two wives and three dugout canoes and a laugh like firecrackers. Then he drowned on the lake. Witchcraft was suspected, possibly tracing back to a scorned girlfriend at a fishing camp on the lake shore. His two wives came to the hut with their young children one morning and asked me to move out. That day. They had no place else to go. Their children clung to them like bark to trees. I gave them all the kwacha I could spare and moved into another hut nearby, bought an old dirt-brown couch, and troweled out a concrete floor. There was a big mango tree in the yard, and while I smoothed out my new floor, the tree branches filled with children. How are you? How are you? They sang over and over, staring like owls. Old men waved and called out greetings as they walked past. Women carrying 50 pounds of groundnuts on their heads stopped and curtsied low. One man walked from a village hours upriver to bring me a gift of crocodile meat and bottom-feeding river fish. He asked for nothing in return, and I never saw him again. Perhaps best, as crocodile turns out to be a foul-tasting meat. Even one of the village lunatics got in a greeting. As I ate a snack on my porch, he patted my shoulders and showed me his dick. Not totala, I said. Thank you. Awa umusungu. No totala, he replied. No white man. Thank you.
And thank you for reading that.
You're welcome.
Not a lovable place. You came to love many people in it. You refer to one of the principal characters, the principal character in the book, Augustine Gerry.
Yes.
As best friend for your life.
Where can I start? I mean, he was a chess master. He liked to quote Romeo and Juliet. And he came from a place of wanting to do the right thing. And I could understand how, like most people in Zambia who get into the health fields and get into teaching, a lot of them start to try and play the system to make sure they have enough money, to make sure they can eat. And he never did that. It was always about doing his job and being decent. And he was more than a friend. He was a guide. He was one of those people I can look back on and think, you know, this is how I should be.
He was also willing to stand with you and risk his life with you, wasn't he?
He was. He was. Although he'd be like, dude, stop getting in trouble so much.
Yeah. What got you in trouble there in that village?
I think part of it was just cultural differences and part of it might have been because of the hearing loss and not understanding some of the subtleties with how I was supposed to interact and how I was supposed to behave. And so I was good at fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And
you confronted people. They would say, we have our own way of doing
it. Yes, they called it the snake in the grass.
Mm-hmm.
That you have to approach people like a snake in the grass. You don't come right at someone and say, this is what I want. You kind of slide around, sort of meander your way to the point. And I'd be like, come on, we need more medicines. The chief should definitely be helping us out more. Why? I'm not going to play with that. Not the best approach. I mean, I wish I'd been able to get more accomplished. I don't know what approach would have worked. To this day, I don't know what approach.
You were trying to dig a well.
I was trying to dig a well. I was trying to dig several wells. I would say I was about 2 days' travel from the nearest place to buy a bag of cement. Mm-hmm. And there was no way to get stuff up to us. But we were the first group. We didn't know that what we were doing was going to be hard. We were going to change the world.
Yeah.
We were going to save the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even do my laundry most days, but I was going to save the world.
Yeah. Well, digging a well is hard when you have to do it essentially with your bare hands. And a lot of people wonder, what's a well? Why do you want to do it?
Yeah, they're like, hey, I've been drinking from the river my whole life. I'm fine. And you're like, yeah, but three of your four kids have died. But they were making do with what they had. And another thing, they had this tremendous, tremendous joy for life in spite of all that. Maybe even because of it. Maybe because, you know, that like, I might not live till tomorrow. I might as well have a good time today. I like to say that there were no bad habits in Manunga, only full-blown addictions.
Yeah.
People didn't have one drink they had until they couldn't drink anymore.
Well, there. At one point, when you go to try and get some supplies, you come back on a bus. Something happened to you on board that bus, which is an image, I guess, that you will probably have for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Still not very easy to talk about. I was. I'd actually had my hearing aid stolen on vacation, so I couldn't hear anything, and I knew I had a spare set in the village, so I just wanted to get back, and I was sitting on the bus, which was like an old school bus, over the rear wheels. And so my knees were up to my chest. And at first I was like, this is fine. But then after like 3-4 hours, I wasn't comfortable. So I got up and walked to the front of the bus and told the boy who was on his way to school, hey, switch seats with me. And in Zambia, children have to do whatever adults tell them. So he didn't really have a choice. And, you know, I figured his legs weren't that long. So he went and took my seat. And 5 minutes later, the bus crashed, and he was killed because he was thrown out of the window. So it was a very, I guess, life-altering experience. Excuse me.
Let me try a difficult question.
Okay.
Do you carry that little boy's, some essence of his life with you now?
I try to. I mean, I wish I did a better job of it. But I try to remember, you know, that, like, every day is a gift. I mean, it could have been me in that seat. And we have this assumption that, you know, we'll always have time. There's really not that much time, and it's really not worth harming other people.
Are there times, now that you're hearing the whole cacophony of sounds that is our world, particularly in New York, are there times when you sometimes miss the quiet?
Oh, sure. I think one of the most amazing things about deafness and one of the most amazing things about the signing deaf community is when you're deaf without hearing aids and implants, you're alone with your thoughts a lot. And I think being alone with your thoughts, it promotes an empathy for other people, because you get to see having a mind with all of its complaints and thoughts and worries is not an easy thing for anyone. And if you ever spend time in the deaf community, it's one of the most wonderful, compassionate communities. And I think maybe with all this noise we have in our modern world, that gets lost a little bit.
But it's nicer hearing for you.
It's what I know. I've come to like Van Morrison. It's the best language for making fun of my brothers. But this is what I know.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Josh Schwiller. His new book is The Unheard, A Memoir of Deafness in Africa.
And where that foghorn blows, I will be coming home. Yeah, when the foghorn blows, I wanna hear it. I don't have to fear it.
You can read an excerpt of The Unheard and see a video about the operation that changed Josh Schwiller's life at our website, npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.